This is Ham College, episode 115, for July 26, 2024. Ham College is brought to you by ICOM. Fun, sun, and QSO. Wherever you go, keep the fun going with one of ICOM's go-to portables or remote rigs. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Ham College. I'm Professor Thomas.
And I'm Dean Martin.
And we've got technician-type questions for you tonight.
All right.
What did we talk about last time?
Well, let me think. Purpose and permissible use of amateur radio service, operator primary station license grant, meanings of basic terms used in FCC rules, interference, races rules, phonetics, and frequency coordination.
And this month we're going to talk about frequency allocations, emission modes, spectrum sharing, transmission near band edges, contacting the International Space Station, and power output.
Sounds like an interesting night.
Yep. That's just the questions we're going to cover. We're going to talk about more than that.
We always do.
You know, if you've got friends or family might be interested in ham radio, turn them on to the show here, because we'll be covering the entire amateur technician pool, along with some explanations,
some demonstrations, aggravations, all the Asians.
Yep.
No, hopefully no aggravations.
Yep. Connotations. Yep. So, you might wonder, if you might say to yourself,
Self?
Why do they call it ham radio?
You know, I've often wondered that myself.
Well, there's several different reasons they might call it ham radio. When I did a search this time around, the first thing I came up with was this right here. The term ham radio originated in the United States in the early 20th century as an informal term for amateur radio operators, or hams. The term may have originated from the call sign of the first amateur wireless station operated by Harvard Radio Club members in 1908. The station's call sign was HYALMY, which was a combination of the first two letters of each of the operators' last names. They were Albert S. Hyman, Bob Almy, and this last one, I came up with four different first names. Pookie, Poogie, Peggy, or Reggie Murray.
Peggy or Reggie, that's interesting.
Yeah, that's a lot of
aliases,
and they all sound similar, so maybe this story was passing word of mouth.
Could have been.
This widely circulated story claims that around 1911, an impassioned speech made by a Harvard University student, Albert Hyman, to the United States Congress in support of amateur radio operators turned the tide and helped defeat a bill that would have ended amateur radio activity entirely by assigning the entire radio spectrum to the military. However, in 1999, the late K3UOC, who received his doctorate from Harvard Graduate School of Education and was very active with the Ham Club, wrote, "Note, this legend has been published and told by word of mouth countless times over the past 90 years. Unfortunately, it isn't so. HWC members researched the story, even obtaining the copy of the congressional record for the date in question. We could find no record of Mr. Hyman appearing before Congress. We have to admit, though, it's a very entertaining story. Also, we could not find these three guys, Hyman, Almy, and Murray, in our alumni directory either." So, totally false. Well, yeah. Probably totally false.
Mostly totally.
Yeah. If when I search this on Google, you know, now Google likes to pop up its AI explanation at the top. It just read that first paragraph there about that story, and then it didn't say anything about, well, it's a lie. it just kind of overlooked that.
Fact.
Yeah, but that's not the only rumor going around as to how ham radio got the term or the name ham.
Oh, yeah, there's several. The 1909 Wireless Registry in the May edition of Modern Electrics listed Earl C. Hawkins of Minneapolis, Minnesota, as operating with the unofficial call sign HAM, according to the Wireless Association of America.
Hmm.
That's not Hawkins as in Hawkins Middle School.
No. We should have worn the shirt tonight.
I would have if I knew we were doing that.
Yeah. There's another version. Supposedly, HAM was an acronym derived from the initials of a very popular magazine which covered radio extensively, Home Amateur Mechanic Magazine.
Sometimes claimed that HAM came from the first letter of the last names of three radio pioneers, Heinrich Rudolf Hertz, Edwin Armstrong, and Guglielmo, I probably butchered that again, Marconi. However, this cannot be the source of the term, as Armstrong was an unknown high school student when the term first appeared.
Hmm. And there's another legend, likely an example of corporate wishful thinking. Hammerlin products were supposedly so preeminent in the pioneering era of radio that they became part of the language of radio. As the story goes, early radio enthusiasts affectionately referred to Hammerlin products as ham products and called themselves ham operators. In truth, though, Hammerlin was a minor and barely known company when created in 1910. At the time, ham was already gaining recognition in the radio field.
And last but not least, there are probably others, but this is the last one we have. At the turn of the 20th century, the terms ham and plug were used by landline telegraphers to describe an operator who lacks ability or who had poor ham-fisted skills. By 1881, it had been alleged by telegrapher unions and trade groups that companies were employing ham operators who were negligent or incompetent. These unskilled operators were described as either drinking alcohol while working, irresponsible teenage boys, or merely having very little ability. Many of the other amateurs increasingly adopted the word ham to describe their hobby and themselves during this period, embracing the word that was originally an insult. For example, Thomas F. Hunter's exuberant poem, I Am the Wandering Ham, from the January 1920 issue of QST. I'm going to have to look that up now when I leave here.
Here is a picture from the Railroad Telegrapher in 1895, talking about the evolution of a ham. This was, I won't say it was an advertisement, but there were companies out there that were supposed to train telegraph operators to do better. And you can see day one, he started out as a ham. On the 10th day, he actually sprouted a hand and a head, I guess, and a foot. On the 30th day, they're supposed to be good operators by then. So in 30 days, they could turn you from a ham into a, well, he still is kind of shaped like a ham. But this is really about the only picture I could find that
would
go with that.
It kind of makes me think about one time, a place I worked actually a few times before this. Somebody asked me what I had plans for the weekend. I'm going to a ham fest. He thought we went around and like sampled pork products and things like that. I swear, it's like he had no clue.
Well, you know, honey baked ham used to have an exhibit at Huntsville.
Really?
Yeah. Used to be right there in the front door when you went in.
Well, I'm going to Huntsville. I wish they had another one.
Well, I do too. That would be handy. Tonight we're going to be referring to a document here. I'll tell you what it is before we get to it. It's going to be this right here. It's a U.S. amateur radio band chart. This version, courtesy of ARRL.org, you can get it at the link at the bottom of the screen right there. And, oh, I see Tommy has found one over there.
Keep mine with me.
Yep. That's actually the one you had at field day, I think.
It is. I put it in the bag and kept it in there so I'd have it.
So we'll be using that for our question and answers tonight. But right now, we're going to go back. I'll tell you what has some other stuff that really didn't have anything to do with what we said earlier about the questions. And that's where we are right now. What was the first type of radio, Tommy? How could they transmit a signal? What would they have used?
Spark gap?
I just happen to have a little video here.
No way.
Yeah.
How timely.
A couple of young guys in it, too.
I think it's time for a little bit of ham radio history.
All right.
What are we going to talk about tonight?
Today we're going to stroll back as far as the late 1800s and talk about spark gap transmitters.
Spark gaps. Man, that sounds like a lot of fun and dangerous, too.
So it could be dangerous.
Yeah, fire and radio. I mean, great combination. Well, maybe not such
not
a great...
Not a great combination.
No. So tell us a little bit about it.
Okay. Well, the simple definition of spark gap transmitter is that it's a device for generating radio frequency electromagnetic waves using a spark gap. And that's straight from Wikipedia, if you can't tell.
Okay.
So, anyway, history tells us that the spark gap transmitter was invented by several people. In 1862, James Clerk Maxwell predicted the propagation of electromagnetic waves through a vacuum with it. In 1878, David Hughes used a spark gap to generate radio signals. He achieved a range of about 500 meters.
That is a pretty good range.
It is.
I would say for nobody ever having broadcast before.
Yeah, that's pretty good. It's impressive. In 1888, Heinrich Hertz set out to scientifically verify Maxwell's predictions. Hertz used a tuned spark gap transmitter and a tuned spark gap detector, which was built from a loop of wire connected to a small spark gap. It was only a few meters away. Hertz was able to verify the electromagnetic waves were being produced by the transmitter. When the transmitter sparked, small sparks also appeared across the receiver's gap. They were so small they had to be seen with a microscope.
Wow.
That's pretty small. I couldn't even imagine. Yeah. These devices served as transmitters for most wireless telegraphy systems for the first three decades of radio, which is from 1887 to 1916. The first demonstrations of practical radio were carried out using them. In later years, some more efficient transmitters were developed based on rotary machines like the high-speed Alexanderson alternators and the static pulse and arc generators. But spark generators were still preferred by most operators. This was because of their uncomplicated design and because the carrier stopped when a telegraph key was released, which allowed the operator to listen through for a reply.
Wow. This is a pulse and arc generator? Is that what that is?
It is.
It looks...
That is one big son of a gun, too.
And it doesn't look like a transmitter to me. I mean, it looks more like a milking machine or something. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
That's heavy duty, though.
Right. And it was saying, I read some more in the article. It's pretty interesting on Wikipedia. That's where most of this came from. But anyway, you can go out there and look it up. But it says they were, ships used it to signal back to shore. Well, it'd take a pretty good sized ship to just carry that bad boy around.
It would. And look at all those. That looks like water pipes to me. I don't know. Maybe they're running gas or something in there.
I don't know.
But man, that is wow.
It's huge. I was kind of surprised when I saw the picture of it when I was doing the research.
I don't even know what to think about that. That is just really unusual looking for radio equipment.
Yeah, I'm glad we're not using those today.
I'm not. I am too, yeah, because we don't really
I don't
have
think
room.
You can get one in here.
No.
Chip said, imagine that in the MFJ catalog.
Yeah. Shipping would be killer, man. Shipping charges.
I guarantee you. Yeah. That got us interested back, however many years ago that was that we covered the technician exam last.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And we built our own spark gap transmitter. Actually, we modified the project we had done before.
Yeah, but you didn't have to use a microscope to see the spark in it, though.
No.
You need a pair of welding goggles to keep from burning your retinas.
Pretty much.
This is a portion of the show that we're going to call the Project Corner. Let's pick up where we were last time around, Tommy, if you'll grab
I'm dying to see what we're going to build.
Yeah, because you don't really know, do you?
Nope.
Let's pull all this stuff out in here and see what we've got there. And this is from the pilot episode of Ham College, our telegraph set we talked about earlier. We've got our telegraph key right there. We've got our sounder. And we got a battery because it wouldn't do anything until we hooked it to a battery. So let's hook all that up. Here's you one.
Hang on just a minute. You better go work.
Yeah, we may need that. Okay. We won't need that for a minute, but we may actually need it in a minute. So the way this thing works is, you know, we showed you last time, you just push down on the key here, and you'll get an action over here on what we call the sounder. Well, it's not working too good, is it? That's because there's a little bit too much gap in between there, and we did have to do some adjustments on that last time to make it fit. There we go. So
that CW ought to be good for about 30 feet. I could hear it.
Yeah, probably could. But it's just a click every time we hit the key there. Now, I think we can actually improve on that, Tommy.
All right.
And there'll be a little extra surprise with it, too. But wouldn't it be nice if that tone was a little bit long? Because here, you know, it's a little hard to tell between a dot and a dash.
Right.
As to what exactly you're sending there. What if we made this into a buzzer?
That would be nice.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? First, though, let's take a look at what we've got right here, right now. And here's our schematic here. You can see our key on the left-hand side there, and then our little coil and our sounder and the battery. You hit the key, and it just pulls that little flopper down there on the coil and makes a racket. And would you believe we could make that into a buzzer with just two pieces of wire and a screw?
No.
We can.
We can?
We actually can. And I tell you what, why don't we do it?
Show me.
I just happen to have all the tools.
I lived in Missouri.
Yeah. That was the Show Me State?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Well, here's all we're going to need right here. We're going to have to change a few things. We're not going to be able to leave it exactly like it is now.
Okay.
All right. So what we're going to have to do here is break the circuit. We want to make this thing vibrate. We won't need that yet.
You sure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We need to make this thing vibrate.
I'm going to keep it right here, though.
All right, so how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to turn this into a single-pole, single-throw relay.
Okay.
Of the normally closed variety. Because, you know, a relay is nothing but a coil and some contacts.
No, so you're going to make it chatter.
We're going to make it chatter. And to do that, well, I guess the first thing we ought to do is take one of these wires loose here.
Okay.
All right, so we'll just take that one loose.
Why don't we take these loose, too?
Maybe just, take one of those loose.
You sure? I told you I need the fire extinguisher.
Okay, so this wire right here did go to this side of the key. We're going to move it up here. We'll just put it under, you know, here's another piece of metal just like that one. We're going to put it up under this one. Okay, so we've just moved this one wire and put it under that piece of metal. And this is going to be what I would call the wiper on a relay. We're going to use this to make a contact to go on top of that wiper.
Okay.
All right. And we're going to put a piece of wire on here at the bottom of that so that we'll connect it back over here in just a moment. But for right now, Tell you what, why don't you help me with this? I will hold this. Why don't you screw that into the side of the key here? Oh, well, actually the side of the sounder.
They still hadn't invented electric screwdrivers by this point?
Not by this point. They did have copper wire, though.
Well, I hope they invent them by the next project.
Yeah. This is actually a piece of just wire out of some Romex house wiring. Good and tight?
Yeah, but I can't see if I got the wire under it.
No, you didn't.
It's kind of hard to see. Why don't you let me hold the block of wood, because it's kind of hard to
pull the
wire up.
Yeah, they're probably having a trouble seeing this themselves.
Well, that's what it looks like in
all its
glory.
That's what it looks like. Yep. Here. All right. So all we did is put a piece of wire over here that comes up on top of our piece of metal. It's just touching the piece of metal right there. And then we've got this red wire from the bottom of it. I'll tell you what, we'll put that back up under here. So if you'll tighten that down. Okay. And what if I told you we didn't just make a buzzer, but we also just made a spark gap transmitter? Yeah, you can pull that out now.
I've been waiting for this.
Yep. Let's take a look at the schematic on this. And you can see we've modified it a little bit. We've got the key there in series with the battery. And then, you know, over on the right where it says spark gap, as I was saying, that's just a single pole, single throw, normally closed relay.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a switch. But when we energize that coil by pressing down the key, it's going to pull this right here away from that piece of metal because the magnet, you know, electromagnet's energized. All right, as soon as it pulls it down, the circuit's broke, so it's going to go back up. Circuit's going to be made, so it's going to go down again.
Okay.
So give us some power there, and let's see how it works now. Let's turn it where our viewers at home can maybe get a better look at it.
Should I get 911 on the...
You hear its buzzer now.
Yep. And I see the spark, too.
You don't need a magnifying glass or telescope or microscope or anything to see that, do you?
I guess those fellas were doing it all wrong.
Yep.
Well, they used another one to receive it. Can we receive it on something?
We can actually receive it on something, and that's what we're trying to prove here. I've got a radio. So let's just turn on this radio. You know, it's a shortwave radio, so Peter would be mighty proud of us.
And it's a realistic one.
It is a realistic one.
I see you got Australia on there.
I actually do. We're tuned to 2.59 megahertz here on this Radio Shack. What is this one? It's a DX398. All right. So let's see if we can hear anything when we fire off our spark gap transmitter.
Oh, yeah.
Here. Hit me there and we'll see if we can hear it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's real evident. So,
well,
and we haven't really extended out the antenna. But if we do that, we're going to hear all the other noise that's in the room here. But maybe.
That didn't really help.
No.
It's close enough.
It's close enough. So there you go.
Real spark gap transmitters are, I believe they're illegal now. But, I mean, this is just
causing
a little bit of noise here.
If I took the radio to the other side of the room, actually, you wouldn't hear it anymore.
Right, absolutely.
But That's a basic spark gap transmitter. It's just a relay. You could do the same thing with just a store-bought relay.
Mm-hmm.
We're just doing it with a homemade one because it makes a nice little blue flame there, and it's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah. Okay.
And if the lights go out, you can...
You could. I don't know why, but you could. But let's take a look at what kind of spark gap transmitters they were using at the time. You know, there were a lot of different ones around. But here's one right here. Tommy, you gave us this picture.
Yeah, this is courtesy of Wikipedia as well.
Well, I see we've got batteries just like we did on ours.
Yep.
And then I see we've got a telegraph key just like we did on ours.
Yep, got an induction coil.
And what that induction coil does is when we hit the key and it sends the voltage to it, the voltage on the other side of that induction coil is going to come out at a much higher magnitude, you know, a much higher voltage.
Okay.
Because it's working sort of like a transformer would. But it's an induction coil, just like the coil on an old...
In your car.
On an old car.
Yeah. Or a lawnmower or whatever.
And above that, we've got the spark gaps, which on ours, you know, this was our spark gap right here.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we saw the sparks. They took it an extra step there. You see that tuning coil there and those Linden jars? I'm not sure why the Linden jars are there. Maybe they're acting as a capacitor. But they're basically making a tuned circuit there. Mm-hmm. And you can see they got one side of that coil to ground. The other side goes to an aerial, which is what Peter calls it. Yeah, we call it antennas. Basically, they're tuning that spark, trying to tune it to a particular frequency. And that's why they have those extra components there. Now, we could have actually, you know, put an inductor and a capacitor and all of that and then strung a piece of wire on this one and kind of tuned it to a frequency, and it would have got out a little further.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's what a spark gap transmitter is. And like we've said, you know, there's a lot of different designs for them. That was just a very basic early one there, and this is really a crude one here. But, you know, anything that's making a spark, you're probably going to hear it on a radio on the lower frequency bands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it works... similar to the ultrasonic dish I did on Amateur Logic a few months back when we made a spark with the file in this same battery.
And this is really what we should have had when we did that. I would have saved my file.
Yeah, you wouldn't have had to go get another $12 file.
Yeah. So there's our homemade project for this time around. A cheap buzzer that's also a spark gap transmitter.
Well, that was kind of fun.
That was kind of fun.
And we didn't even have to use this.
We didn't need that at all, did we?
You know, if the fan's not running in here and the air's been off, you can still kind of smell somebody welding in here every once in a while.
The ozone just kind of hovered around.
That was a fun little thing.
Yeah, that was. Now, I had mentioned something, I think, in the last episode. Maybe we'll expand on that spark gap a little bit. What I was thinking at the time, and we're not going to do it, but is actually put a tuned circuit like that coil and that Leyden jar there, the capacitor,
mm-hmm.
and actually tune it to a particular frequency. Rather than just taking out all the bands at once, pick on a particular band with it.
That's cool. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. We might play with that at some point. Be interesting to see. Well, with that, we're going to get on into tonight's questions here.
Okay.
And I don't remember who asked the first one last time, so why don't you ask me?
Okay. I could do that. Which of the following frequency ranges are available for phone operations by technician licensees? A, 28.050 megahertz to 28.150 megahertz.
B, 28.100 megahertz to 28.300 megahertz.
C, 28.300 megahertz to 28.500 megahertz.
Or D, 28.500 megahertz to 28.600 megahertz. Gee whiz, you should have took this one.
Yeah, no, I shouldn't, because I don't know the answer. I have a hunch, but I don't know.
Yeah, which of the following frequencies are available for phone operation for technician licensing? Well, A, 28, .050 to 28150. I'm going to say no. I don't think that's it because that's down around the bottom. You looked at the band chart over there. I saw.
Yeah, but it's not my turn to answer the question.
Okay. So I don't think it's A because I think that portion of the band is for CW. I'm looking to see if he's smiling over there. He's not.
I didn't look for the
clues.
CW part. I looked for the phone.
Okay. So it's gonna be above that. I'm just gonna have to take a guess at it because I don't really know right off. I would look at the band chart to try to figure this out. I'm going to say it is B, 28100 to 28300 megahertz.
Okay, that's your final answer? Might as well be.
Might as well be.
Okay.
The chat room, the few who have answered are saying it's C.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably right.
They are.
Boy, that stung.
I thought it felt pretty good. It's usually me that gets the first one.
Well, there it is. You're right. That's a 10-meter portion out of that band chart. You can see the green is phone and image frequencies, starts at 28300. The red is RIDI and data below. And that's the way all of these bands are. The very lowest frequencies on there are going to be CW and data. And then you get into the phone. The novice and the technicians are going to have the left-hand side of the phone frequencies there. They're going to have the lower ones.
Yeah.
The yellow there represents a single sideband phone for technicians.
I might be wrong. I haven't looked, but I'm pretty sure that technician, this is the only HF portion that you get for phone.
Well, you
there may be some CW. I don't know. I don't remember.
That's something I really can't talk about right now.
You can't?
No. But I have a feeling we'll be talking about it sometime tonight.
Okay.
Which amateurs may contact the International Space Station on VHF bands? A, any amateur holding a general class or higher license.
B, any amateur holding a technician class or higher license.
C, any amateur holding a general class or higher license who has applied for and received approval from NASA.
Or D, any amateur holding a technician class or higher license who has applied for and received approval from NASA. First of all, NASA don't care about your license. Well, they do, but I guess but that's not part of the equation here. Contact the International Space Station on VHF bands. That would be like 2 meters-ish. Any amateur holding... It's going to be B. Any amateur holding a technician class or higher license. Because technicians get the pretty... Well, they do get the full VHF
spectrum.
All the part that's allowed for ham use. So I'm going with B. Not even going to beat around the bush.
I'll agree with you. And looks like the chat room, they are all saying B. We're getting more answers here, so everybody felt better about this question than they did the last one. There you go.
You get one of these?
Here's you one of those.
Which frequency is in the 6-meter amateur band? A, 49 megahertz.
B, 52.525 megahertz.
C, 28.50 megahertz.
Or D, 222.15 megahertz. D, that's not 6 meters. That's
definitely not.
That's a
1.25.
Yeah, it's way above. C, 28.5. Well, that to me, I'm going to say that's 10 meters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that. So it's got to be A or B. So I'm going to say, yeah, it's B, 52.525 megahertz.
Yeah, I would concur, even though I just looked at the thing. I knew what this one was. But hey, that's where all your little remote control toy $10 cars from Walmart run.
Yeah, I think that's where Baby that Bronco. New CB frequency they came up with was.
Really?
Yeah. Or it was at one point they were selling 49 megahertz walkie-talkies, I think. I don't. That was a long time ago. I don't remember for sure. But sticking with B, the chat room's all saying B. Yep.
Yeah, 6 meters starts exactly at 50 megahertz.
52.525, that's like right in the middle of the phone and image portion of the 6 meter band.
Well, I jumped the gun with my information, didn't I?
You sure did. If we look on the right-hand side, it says EAGT out there. That means Extra Advanced General or Technician Class Licensees. So all of that stuff in red and all of that stuff in green, anybody who's got a ham ticket, except for novice, and there hadn't been novice tickets issued in a long time, but there could be a few still out there. Pretty much everybody's got permission to operate the entire 6 meter band.
6 meters is a fun band too.
It is.
Get it open. It's great.
It is a good band. Which amateur band includes 146.52 megahertz? Is it A, 6 meters?
B, 20 meters.
C, 70 centimeters.
Or D, 2 meters. I just so happen to know that this one is D, 2 meters, because that's the 2 meter call frequency.
2 meters. I'm going to agree with you. Right there in the middle.
Oh, yeah, we got visual aids.
146.52 megahertz.
300 divided by the frequency in megahertz. Let's see if that works out.
Megahertz?
2 meters.
There you go. There is a formula for that. Notice again, Extra, Advanced, General, and Technician have access to all the frequencies of the 2 meter band. If you're a technician, you're getting some frequencies here.
You actually get a lot. There's a lot you can do with the lowest class license now.
Mm-hmm.
Like you pretty much get, I guess you get everything above 30 megahertz.
I'm not going to say just yet.
Neither confirm nor deny.
Exactly. Can't say anything else about that. But I do have another question.
I said it. How many amateurs use the 219 to 220 megahertz segment of the 1.25 meter band? A, spread spectrum only.
B, fast GAN television only.
C, emergency traffic only.
Or D, fixed digital message forwarding systems only.
Well, I'm glad you got this one.
Okay, how many amateurs use the 219 to 220 megahertz segment of the 1.25 meter band? It's a pretty small sliver of spectrum. It is a megahertz wide, but...
I was going to cheat, look it up, but I'm not.
I'm going to say spread spectrum. I don't think so. I don't think that's enough bandwidth to really use that. FastGAN TV. No, that's, you know, you'd be taking up a whole lot of bandwidth there trying to do FastGAN television, especially in 1 megahertz of bandwidth, where NTSC TV is like around 5 megahertz of bandwidth. I don't think you do fast scan television there. C, emergency traffic only. Now, we don't really use 220 megahertz or the 1.25 meter band for emergency traffic. Guess you could, but it's not a super popular band. D, fixed digital message forwarding systems only. I'm going to say that's the answer because
the other ones don't seem good.
Yeah, because the other ones don't seem good, and digital messaging doesn't take up much bandwidth. It's pull
that
off.
That seems plausible to me.
Yeah.
Process of elimination, I would agree with that.
That's, you know, 1.25 meters, a pretty small band, so I'm going to say D. Chat room, yeah, they're saying D.
You know, here, I'll give you that.
Okay.
You go. Nice job.
Totally redeemed myself.
You did. You totally redeemed yourself.
119 to 220 in the orange there.
Mm-hmm.
Fixed digital message forwarding systems only. On which HF band does a technician class operator have phone privileges? A, none.
B, 10-meter band only.
C, 80-meter, 40-meter, 15-meter, and 10-meter bands.
Or D, 30-meter band only. Which HF bands does the technician class operator have phone privileges? Well, we just kind of touched base on that, but I just happen to know that it's B, 10-meter band only, from 10.300 to 10.500, because I actually remember that. I can't remember if I sent the tweet out tonight. 28.
Okay.
So 10.300. See?
Okay. 10-meter band only.
Yeah. 10 meters is my answer.
That's what everybody's saying in the chat room. Anybody who's been a ham.
Yeah, but this shows for people that aren't.
Yeah, true.
Primarily.
10-meter band only.
Keep that up.
Fun, sun, and QSO. Wherever you go, keep the fun going with one of ICOM's go-to portables or remote rigs. The IC705 and IC7300 radios both feature a large touchscreen with real-time spectrum scope and waterfall display for intuitive functions and setting operation. So kick back, enjoy the breeze, and make those QSOs with ease. The IC705 portable radio provides base station features and performance in the palm of your hand. From HF to 50, 144, or 440 megahertz, enjoy a wide variety of bands in the D-Star DV, single sideband, CW, RIDI, AM, and FM modes. This handheld also includes an RF direct sampling system, wireless LAN and Bluetooth connectivity, an internal GPS receiver, and more. The IC7300 is an industry first to use an RF direct sampling system and an entry-level HF radio. This high-performance radio includes an audio scope function, IP+, class-leading RMDR and phase noise characteristics, 15 discrete bandpass filters, and a built-in automatic antenna tuner. This compact and innovative radio will far exceed your expectations. Bring the fun wherever you are by going remote. The optional RSBA1 remote control software allows you to operate your ICOM from a portable PC. For those of you with an IC7300, head on over to ICOMAmerica.com and download the latest firmware to get ICOM's new digital pre-distortion capabilities. This technology corrects nonlinear distortion at the final amplifier stage by applying inverse distortion at the pre-distortion section in the FPGA unit in advance. For more information about ICOM's amateur radios and to locate a dealer, visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur today. For the love of ham radio.
What do you say we give away something?
How about a cool shirt?
That is a cool looking shirt. If somebody wanted a shirt just like that one right there.
When it says ICOM ham crew on the front and on the back, so you look just as good when you leave the ham fest as you did when you got there wearing it.
That's the one.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an easy way to get one.
How's that?
Or possibly get one. At least throw your name in the hat.
How would I get my name in the
hat?
Well,
you would just send an email to hamcollege@amateurlogic.tv, and your name would be registered in the monthly drawing for an ICOM swag package featuring a T-shirt and whatever else Jesse sticks in the box.
Yeah.
And we just happened to draw the lucky winner right just a few minutes ago.
Who's going to be looking good in this shirt?
This month, there's actually some text. There's actually a message here.
No way.
You know, you don't have to have a message. All you got to have is a name and an email. But every now and then we get lucky and somebody will actually put a real message in there.
Yeah.
This month's winner said, "Hey, George, Tommy, and crew, love watching you guys go through the question pool. Looking forward to you getting to the new general questions. Please enter me into your T-shirt giveaway. Have a great summer, 73, Leanne K1YKH. Well, congratulations, Leanne.
Congratulations, Leanne. Jesse will be getting in touch with you.
Yep.
Get your information. So now what happens?
Well, I'm going to hit this button over here, and we're going to delete all the entries.
Oh, wow, all of them.
Every last one of them.
You're not going to save them?
No. It's completely, it's just a white screen
now. I see this.
So we're going to have some more entries.
So get them coming in.
Yep.
Like right now, you can go ahead and send them in for the next month's drawing.
Hey, as long as you're watching, why not?
Heck yeah.
Yep. It's an email. It doesn't even need a stamp.
Cheap old man approved.
Exactly. Well, we got some more questions here.
Yeah, it's not even coming off Tommy's back this time. Yeah, I hadn't had this one on, so this wouldn't be the one you get anyway.
No. Jesse's going to send you one, not the one that we've been pulling out of the drawer over here for a few years. For a few years, yeah. The last one, who answered that one?
I think I might have, but I'm not sure.
I think you did. So, yeah, I guess you need to ask me this one.
Which of the following VHF, UHF band segments are limited to CW only? A, 50 megahertz to 50.1 megahertz, and 144 megahertz to 144.1 megahertz.
B, 219 megahertz to 220 megahertz, and 420 megahertz to 420.1 megahertz.
Or C, 902.0 megahertz to 902.1 megahertz.
Or D, all of these choices are correct. It's not all of them, so it's not D. 902 to 902.1 megahertz. 219 megahertz to 220 and 420 to 420.1. Maybe. Let's see. A, 50 megahertz to 50.1 and 144 to 144.1. So I'm going to say it's A because that's the lower end of both of those bands, the 6-meter band and the 2-meter bands. And that's generally
it's A.
Yep.
I have a hunch that it's D, but I could be totally wrong.
No, I don't think it's D. And I can tell you why.
Because 900 megahertz is not VHF?
Because B, 219 megahertz to 220, we just identified as digital forwarding.
Oh.
Message forwarding systems only.
Oh, we sure did.
So.
Now I got to look.
Yeah.
I'll just wait for the yellow mark to come across the screen.
I'm going to stick with A.
It don't matter if I don't get a buzzer this time, so it's okay.
Okay, what are they saying over in the chat room? Hey.
Oh, I'm Canadian.
A. And it is.
Okay.
All right. There's a 6-meter band. Lower end there, 50 to 50.1. It's got that little sine wave on it. And a key on the right-hand side shows us that's CW only. So, yeah. That would be okay right there. That's the only one I really had questions about. The 2 meter.
It's good for a refresher for this stuff, man. Even though, like I said earlier, it's for non-licensed hands, but it's a good refresher for anybody. It's a good refresher for me.
How are U.S. amateurs restricted in segments of bands where the amateur radio service is secondary? A, U.S. amateurs may find non-amateur stations in those segments and must avoid interfering with them.
B, U.S. amateurs must give foreign amateur stations priority in those segments.
C, international communications are not permitted in those segments.
D, digital transmissions are not permitted in those segments. How are U.S. amateurs restricted in segments of bands where the amateur's radio service is secondary? U.S. amateurs may find non-amateur stations in those segments, but must avoid interfering with them. Let's give foreign... No. It's got to be A. That's the only one up there that makes any sense. I'm going with A, that U.S. amateurs may find non-amateur stations in those segments, but must avoid interfering with them.
Yeah.
So that's definitely the answer.
Chat room agrees with you on that.
Unless it's wrong. It's not wrong.
It's not wrong.
All right. Why should you not set your transmit frequency to be exactly at the edge of an amateur band or subband? A, to allow for calibration error in the transmitter frequency display.
B, so the modulation sidebands do not extend beyond the band edge.
C, to allow for transmitter frequency drift.
Or D, all of these choices are correct. D.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's D.
Well, that's supposed to be a hard edge, that band edge. That's supposed to be a hard limit.
Well, yeah.
You gotta
stay within it. Let's say this is our band right here, and we start at one side and go to the other. These are the edges. If I'm transmitting a signal right here on the edge, if my frequency drifted just a little bit, I could be outside the band.
Mm-hmm.
If... I modulate, you know, because if I'm not sending CW, I'm sending some kind of modulation.
Mm-hmm.
When I modulate, if I'm right on the band edge, it could splatter over the band edge. Depending on if I'm upper sideband, lower sideband, which edge the band I'm on, or if it's AM, it could go either way. And what if my frequency display was wrong.
If you didn't have a... I'm just kidding.
Well, if you had a swan like that one sitting up there...
You could be anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, you better stay way away from the edge of the band. Where may SSB phone be used in amateur bands above 50 megahertz? A, only in subbands allocated to general class or higher licensees.
B, only on repeaters.
C, in at least some segments of all these bands.
Or D, on any band if the power is limited to 25 watts. Where may single sideband phone, which is voice communications, single sideband voice, be used in amateur bands above 50 megahertz? 50 megahertz is 6 meters, the start of 6 meters. So that's where can you talk on signal sideband? That's going to be anywhere, any of those bands, parts of it. And so I'm going to say C, in at least some segment of all these bands that are above 50 megahertz.
It's what everybody's saying in the chat room.
Everybody's right.
Of course, Terry's throwing it up in our face about the 4 meters, 70 megahertz band, which we don't have here in the U.S. They got it over there.
No.
It'd be nice to have, but yeah.
Yeah, we're lucky to have the ones we got.
They hadn't had it that long, I don't think.
Oh, yeah?
Within, I don't know. It's probably been a little while now, but I don't think they've had it forever. There you go.
Nailed it. What is the maximum peak envelope power output for technician class operators in their HF band segments? A, 200 watts.
B, 100 watts.
C, 50 watts.
Or D, 10 watts. What is the maximum peak envelope power output for technician class operators in their HF band segments? Let's see. Technicians can only operate in a portion of the 10-meter band.
Mm-hmm. 10 dot what? Just kidding.
No. they can use more than 10. They can use more than 50. It's going to be 100 or 200. And I'm going to say that 200 strikes a chord with me. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's right. I don't remember this one very much. I think I remember talking about it, but I don't remember the answer. But I'm pretty sure it's more than 100.
Fess up here and be honest. Only reason I know is because I prepared the slide that we're going to show here next.
Well, I probably would have guessed that, because I don't think...
You would have said 200?
I think. I don't know, because it wasn't my question, but I think I would have probably leaned more towards A than B. But I'm sure it's more than C and D.
Oh, yeah. It's 200 watts. Notice that red circle there, novice and technician, 200 watts. Everybody else gets 1,500 watts there, but if you're a novice or a technician, you get 200 watts, which, if the band's cooperating, you can do real good with 200 watts on 10 meters.
You can do pretty good with 100 on them.
Oh, yeah, you could. Except for some specific restrictions, what is the maximum peak envelope power output for technician class operators using frequencies above 30 megahertz? Is it A, 50 watts?
B, 100 watts.
C, 500 watts.
Or D, 1,500 watts. Ooh. Except for some specific restrictions, as a maximum peak envelope power output for technician class operators using frequencies above 30 megahertz. I think I get the whole 50 to 1.5 kW, too. So I'm thinking it's D, 1,500 watts, above 30 megahertz. Now, the previous example would have been in 28-ish megahertz, right? So that was 200 watts. I'm pretty sure it's going to be D, 1,500 watts.
Yeah, I think you're right. Chat room.
I can't imagine running 1,500 watts on 2 meters.
Why not? I can imagine it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem... I don't know.
I mean, it wouldn't do you any good unless the guy you were talking to had 1,500 watts, too.
Yeah.
Because you could way out-talk what you could hear.
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
That was the last question for tonight.
No way.
Yep.
It went by really fast.
It did. It got to a really slow start, though, when I missed that one.
You kind of let the air out of your sail, didn't it?
It did.
It happens to the best of us every once in a while.
Felt like a buzzer.
Kind of sounded like one.
Yep. Well, any final thoughts before we get out of here tonight?
No. Hope to see some of you guys in Huntsville, or girls, whoever's out there.
Yeah, and that is going to be August the
17th and 18th.
Friendliest ham fest in the world.
It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Being in Huntsville, somebody heard about this internet thing coming on because their URL is hamfest.org.
Yeah, they got on time and got a good one.
Yep.
Yeah, so check it out, hamfest.org.
Oh, yeah, you can go buy Gigaparts while you're there.
They'll be there at the Hamfest, but if you haven't been to their store, I would encourage it. Showed a few pictures from there on the last Amateur Logic. Really nice place.
Yeah.
It's huge. It used to be a Home Depot.
I need to get in there again. I hadn't seen the new store yet. When will we be back here? That'll be the next Amateur Logic will be Friday, August the 23rd, and the next Sam College will be Friday, August the 30th.
Boom, 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 just like that.
Till in a row. 7-3.
Yep, 7-3, everybody. Why should you not set your transmit frequency to exactly... Why should you not set your transmission... Okay, third time's going to be the winner here.